Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of The Main Course without Patrick Martins on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alexis McLaughlin here with my co-host Philip Gilmore.
Good morning.
We've got Liz in the studio engineering the show for us and are very excited today to have Phoebe Tran and Rennell Sun of Umi Bushwick with us. So hey guys, welcome to the studio.
Hi.
Good morning.
Umi Bushwick is a new pop-up that is, well, obviously in Bushwick. And how long? Is this your second week?
This is our fourth week. Well, the first two were soft opening.
Okay.
Yeah. We are going to be open for the summer, just Thursday through Saturday, 9 p.m. to 4 a.m.
Exciting. You guys both, this is really interesting. We're excited to have you on the show. I'm excited to talk to you about just, you know, the idea of doing a pop-up and doing, you know, kind of like this startup restaurant, but also your background and where you guys come from, because you met and started your relationship in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm. We were both going to NYU and decided to choose Shanghai as our study abroad program site.
What were you studying at NYU before?
I was studying media production and food studies.
I did food design and entrepreneurship.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we met on the second day and then realized that we were the only two in the program that were studying something related to food. And just started...
Wait, what was everyone else studying? What
brought... Mostly business and finance.
Okay.
Because Shanghai is just known like to be booming in business, so most of the people studying business come. But on the... We just started like cooking dinners together, going to wet markets and cooking for other people. And then after a month of living there, one night while we were out, we tried a Chinese street food stand selling burgers and thought it was the best burger we had. And our friend asked us jokingly if we why not like start our own street food stand. And we're like, okay. So between classes, we went to the hotel supply equipment store and bought like the jankiest equipment. And spent, I think, a total of $100 U.S.
Were the products made in China? Probably,
Yeah.
Because most of the stuff I buy for my restaurants is also made in China, so I just assumed.
Yeah. Straight to the source.
It was funny because after we shopped for everything, we realized that we could have just gotten it, like, for half price at just random Chinese hole-in-the-wall shops. Mm-hmm. Like, we got two propane gas burners, flat top skillets, and then we used Rennell's grandma's suitcase stand. On the first night out, wow. We were like, we waited till 2 a.m. and Rennell was passed out, and I was like, Rennell, we have to wake up, we made a total of 10 burgers, we have to sell these. And then so we went out and we were trying to like find a club to set up outside of. We ended up at this place called The Shelter. It's like this bomb shelter that turned into a nightclub, and we parked our equipment a lot like next to a trash can to scope out the crowd, and then we were like, okay, like this is an awesome spot. We came back and our stand was stolen, and Rennell was freaking out. She was like, what are we gonna do? And I was like, we have to do this. Like, we brought all our stuff in this suitcase, and so we set down the suitcase, and we had this wooden board that we got off of a Chinese tricycle, and we put the wooden board on top, and then we, like, kneeled, we, like, crouched down and, like, set up our burger equipment and just
made
the burgers.
Mind you, we didn't have gloves at the time, so we had to use these chopsticks. We used like disposable chopsticks to like flip everything and like put the lettuce on the bun.
Yeah, and then we were also dressed up like hobos. Because
intentionally or this is just the fashion there?
Yes. Okay, so part of the reason why I chose Shanghai was because I was interested in the food culture there. I did a lot of research on the street food before I got there, and I was determined to try every single one. And then I started working with my professor on like a street food research project. And so I was like, oh, this could be like part of my field study. So we went out and we were like talking to other street food vendors. We were like, do you guys have licensing? Do we need a permit?
That's actually a question that I was really interested in.
I was going to.
It's like, how was this? Any of this legit? Is there any regulation?
You do that in New York. If you're not savvy, you will like you'll just get like $1 billion fine.
I mean, I did buy a dollar empanada at Rockaway yesterday out of someone's front yard. But I mean, like it's difficult. You get busted fast.
I was thinking about, you know, the on the side of the highways, there's the, like, the Guatemalan lady that has, like, the oranges and the waters.
Yeah.
And I always wonder, like, you know, like, I wonder why don't they get tickets? And I was thinking, like, you know, if you're a cop and you gave that, you know, one of those ladies, a ticket or arrested them, you're just, like, the worst person ever, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So you didn't have to get any licensing?
No. I mean, we asked around, and the lady was like, you guys are foreigners, like, you're at higher risk of getting in trouble, like, with the Chengguan, who are, like, the legit police who have been known to, like, beat street vendors to death, and it's just, it's right. Not okay. And we were really scared, so when we first set up, we were like, why don't we just disguise ourselves to look like other street food vendors, so.
Which is, look like bums.
Ish. Yes.
So you just because, to blend in. Well, do you, another question? Do you guys both speak the language?
I do. I went to international school from K through fifth grade.
Okay,
speaking Mandarin.
Does your grandmother lives there?
No, she doesn't. She has a home out there, which we used as our kind of central kitchen production space for a while.
But she's from there.
Yeah.
Well,
my family's all from mostly Hong Kong and the Guangdong province, but. My grandmother was born in Shanghai, so she had a home there.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It was really nice because we would also use that as our catering kitchen for a little bit when we started working with Shanghai Supper Club. Our friend Camden started Shanghai Supper Club where she chooses a secret venue. She works with a local chef and then invites a limited amount of people to bring a plus one 2 times a month. And in June, we did a Burger Babes-themed supper club in the middle of a half pipe. And people who came could, like, skateboard around. And it was, like, the first indoor skate park in Shanghai. So it was really cool. And we did, like, a Asian fusion Cali-style tapas. It was really fun. And then after that, we started working with her doing private dinners and private brunches.
And this all started while you guys were attending classes and in school. But I know you stayed... You stayed longer than your semester. Because I have to assume we haven't really talked, like, was this successful? Because this operation, you know, Burger Babes that you were doing after you guys stopped getting your shit stolen, did...
Yeah, I mean,
we hardly made much money from it, honestly. Like, it was just, like, pocket money. We'd go spend the rest of, like, whatever we made on massages. And then that was pretty much it. We both had full-time jobs, though. That's the reason why we stayed.
We did Burger Babes, and then we stayed for the summer and also did Burger Babes, but we didn't start working with Shanghai Supper Club until June. Mm-hmm. That was when our supper club was.
So the burger in Shanghai converted into American dollars, how much were you selling them for? So
about $5.
Yeah, we had a few versions, a simple menu.
Single patty, double patty, triple patty.
And we did smash patties because we were both from, I mean, like In-N-Out does a smash patty and then Shake Shack also does that and we're both from California, New York. Mm-hmm. So we combined that and then we also when we first tried the burger off of the street food stand, we were like, how do they make it so delicious? And we...
Oh, wait. I have to ask, so how drunk were you when you first tried the burger off the food stand when it was...
Well, let's just say we tried it sober later and it was not very good.
Multiple times. We were trying to recreate the
moment.
In denial. But Rinal had learned how to do like a proper prototyping with food when she was working at IDEO. So we created a whole process out of trying to figure out the perfect burger that we wanted to do for Burger Babes. So we played with like oyster sauce, black sesame sauce,
fish sauce.
Renaud, what does that mean? Proper prototyping for food, because you—that's what you study. You study like food design.
Yeah, it's like
marketing.
Applying the design process to food product development. And so when I was working with IDEO, the client was trying to open a seed-to-table restaurant where they oversee the process from the vegetables being grown all the way to the table where you're serving it to customers. And a food prototyping process is mainly just experimenting. It was a lot of fun. It was like the dream job. I just got to go in the kitchen, like test kitchen, private, get ingredients and make several versions of a dish based on like whatever your goal is. There's always a goal. If you're trying to incorporate as many farm vegetables as possible, then we try like one that uses like 50% of our farm vegetables and trying like, oh, does it taste different with organic soy sauce versus like conventional soy sauce? And the prototype is just testing out with a lot of test subjects, basically.
Yeah. With the financial aspect in mind,
yes,
as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We try to incorporate everything. This is like going to be cheaper, but this one's going to be way better for you.
That's really kind of my business model, because of course I want to use 100% organic and farm vegetables, but then also too. The thing is that if it was 100%, then I'd have to be charging you, $80 for this plate of food. So, it's like that balance is key to success, I think, in our industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love that both of your backgrounds seem to be, approaching food from a really practical business standpoint.
Yeah.
And then
we definitely just fall into our own, like, roles and skills that naturally, like,
there's this restaurateur in Shanghai who said that most important thing for her for success in running a business was to choose the right partners who actually have strengths in your own weaknesses, so you guys can
absolutely
both like complete each other.
Yes, 100%. That's like something I've been lucky with, but yeah, that's so key. And also too, in choosing your team, like especially if you choose, your general manager or your chef, you want them to like know the things that you don't know.
Yeah.
To complete the circle.
And you have to be comfortable with that and like encourage them to do the things that maybe you aren't so good at.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's definitely what happened with Burger Babes. And then after that, we sort of realized like, this is like, we're business partners for life.
Like, no. Does that describe your relationship? And what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses? Care to comment?
I mean, being more of a baker and like I guess pastry, like into pastry, I'm very
analytical.
Tedious. Analytical, and like so I'll do the finances and like every day I'll like go over the sales and I get really excited about counting up the numbers. Like, oh my gosh, we've sold 460 bunwiches so far. And it makes me so excited to see the numbers. Whereas when Phoebe's going over the numbers, she's like, what? But then she, Phoebe is like awesome about going on like every media platform possible and researching and just drawing inspiration in a way, gathering experience from everything that she sees online. So like, before Burger Babes, she didn't really have any classical training in the kitchen at all. I had like worked a few part-time jobs in kitchens in New York and staging here and there, but Phoebe like just had so much, I guess, experience and creativity from everything that she had seen online, just from being able to like know where to look and follow which bloggers and readings and research.
Yeah, it was more just like a research.
Looking at cupcakes on Pinterest.
Really? A lot of our like inspiration does come from Pinterest.
I'm not like internet illiterate, but I'm definitely like kind of like, I'm on Facebook, but that's about it. But I was amazed. My girlfriend's, on Pinterest sometimes, and I was amazed the food scene on Pinterest.
Yeah.
Like, there's not one thing that you can type in that there's not a picture of on Pinterest. And
that's true.
Like, 50 versions. So, I really like that aspect of Pinterest.
Yeah.
It can be a black, dark hole of food adventuring. Yeah. I try and stay away from Pinterest. It seems like an overwhelming...
It can be, for sure. But, like, before, when I was finding inspiration, or, like, when I do, it was a lot of, like, food blogs, or, like, even things like this, where it's just people talking about food and love food and care about where it's coming from. I thought the most exciting thing in preparation for UMI before opening was, like, researching suppliers, because you don't get any of that kind of stuff in Shanghai. With Burger Babes, it's sort of like we had that challenge where we were, like, trying to balance price, because we're trying to set up outside of clubs selling affordable burgers, because that was the whole idea. We were like, everywhere in Shanghai is overcharging a burger because it's in a restaurant, and it's really hard to find a good burger in Shanghai.
Your cheese would come from France, your beef would come from Australia, the bread would come from the local bakery, lettuce would come from somewhere else.
Did you ever come to the impasse of, like, okay, we want to do non-GMO, organic, you know, humanely raised, humanely butchered, and then you match that with, oh, they're not going to remember this burger because they're blacked out drunk. So
is that a marketing point at all in Shanghai? Does anyone care? Did that help your? Was it something you could market, or is that just something that you guys did for your own beliefs?
Yeah,
yeah. I think over time we realized that the Burger Babes ingredients, we would have to do a balance in order to get the right price. But, like, for our supper club dinners, we
went 100%.
We went 100%. Well,
yeah. You have the freedom. 100%. You have the audience there.
110%.
Yeah.
And we both worked with companies that had their own farms and cared a lot about safely sourced food.
Yeah. I was working.
That's the thing in China right now, is just safety. It's a very basic need. People just want safety in their food.
I've thought about that because, you know, obviously, for the last 10 years, every year China has the most new millionaires every year. And then I was thinking about there's people with money there. So people with money also want to eat better, so there must be some market for sure.
Definitely growing.
Yeah.
So the restaurant I helped open, Hunter Gatherer, we're hoping that we can bring more organically grown food and inspire people to care about.
Yeah, because you have an issue of, like, fake organic labeling, and then they just, like, overcharge you. I was working for an online grocer in Shanghai called Kate and Kimmy, and they, like, the whole mission for that online grocer was to provide people with, like, food that you could trust, and vegetables actually grown in, like, greenhouses with filtered air, filtered water, and, like,
transparency and traceability.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working on it. Great. Well, I think we're going to go to a quick break, but we will be right back with Phoebe and Rennell from UMI Bushwick.
Listening to Target Practice by Hard Bodies. This is the main course on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edward Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, welcome back to the main course. Today we have Phoebe and Rennell from Umi Bushwick. I'm Alexis here with Philip, and we were just talking about sourcing, sustainability, Shanghai, China, problems with that. Or
Burger Babes.
Burger Babes, all sorts of stuff. But I wanted to get into a little bit more about, translating your experiences in Shanghai and coming back to New York and, you know, going forward with this idea for a start or for a pop-up. Is this something that you guys decided while you were in Shanghai that you wanted to come back and do this? Or did you come back and just kind of the idea, the chips fell into place?
I'd say the chips fell into place. I was working at Sweet and Shiny Bakery, where our pop-up is now, 2 years ago. I have a crazy, strange passion for making custom cakes for people. I felt like it was like the best way to share my craft with people, I guess. And this bakery closes at 6 p.m.
And Sweet and Shiny is where the Umi Bushwick pop-up is. Yeah. Okay.
It's 214 Knickerbocker Avenue.
What's so across street? Is it
Troutman?
Troutman, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a sketchy corner, but it's...
It was sketchy.
It has character.
Sixteen years ago, you don't want to know how sketchy it was.
Phil's been in the neighborhood for a while.
It's a dream now.
my old boss, who was training me in custom cake decoration, she got pregnant recently, just had her baby, and she moved back to Ohio, where she's from. So she said, this place closes at 6 p.m., please do something with it. And Phoebe and I, after Burger Bays, we knew we could create something together, so we just bought our return flights, told our bosses we were leaving for the summer, and we're going back, though, end of summer. So, yeah.
So it's just a summer project. Is there a challenge in changing how a place is perceived? And I guess, I mean, you're operating out of a bakery. You're a pop-up. So people in the neighborhood, they know this spot is like, oh, yes, that's a bakery if I want something during the day. How do you announce yourselves that you're operating at night? How do you get people to look at a place that they perceive as being closed?
We blast some really cool music. Hang up. We wanted to create a different space within Sweet and Shiny by just like putting up a bunch of really interesting decorations and then displaying our chip encrusted brioche buns, which is funny because we recently encountered an obstacle, I guess you'd call it. When people are walking past, they see the chalkboard sign that I made, and it's like, Cinnabons, or like, we appreciate buns in all shapes and sizes. Cinnabons, man buns. And it's like, people are coming up and they're like, what is a man bun? Can I order one? It's just like, no, we sell bun witches.
So the way the space actually works is a window. It's only a window, and they, during the day, sell cupcakes and coffee out the window. So there's no seating inside. You can't go inside. People just walk up and order. It's actually a benefit for us because we're able to talk to every single passerby. We literally say hello to everybody. And then we tell our story. Like, if you're sitting in the back, you can hear us repeat our story like every 30 seconds. Or like, saying, hello, we're a new late night pop-up at Sweet and Shiny Bakery. We're a bakery during the day, and at night, Umi Bushwick takes over, and then we go.
So you guys are just loud, bright, and shiny, yelling, hollering at people, harassing people as they walk by.
Exactly.
You should pre-record your shtick, and then there's a little button like, hear our story.
Or make it like a big red button, just as like, press it's me. So funny, get people interact with the front.
We've done it so many times that when we came to Hi Hello, we met Kip. Like, I explained what Umi was in, like, two sentences. He was like, oh, my God, you should go on Shark Tank. Like, you've got that elevator pitch down.
Do you have, will you tell it to us now?
Yeah. So, Umi Bushwick is a new late-night pop-up at Sweet and Shiny. We're open Thursday through Saturday, 9 p.m. to 4 a.m., and we're selling chip-encrusted brioche buns, cradling different fillings inspired by places that we've lived in or traveled to. So each bun has a different story behind it, and it's based off of a place that we've been or our first home, California. But throughout the summer, we'll be rotating the menu to include other places, including Korea, Hong Kong, Thailand, and Taiwan.
I think that was a little more than two sentences, but that was perfect.
I own Momo's Sushi Shack. And have you eaten at Momo?
Not yet.
So we have a thing called bombs, which are kind of like dome-shaped.
Oh, I love the bombs.
Dome-shaped nigiri with fish on top. So it's kind of like nigiri, but like round little globes. Mm. And so the waiters describe it a certain way, but my fear is like, you know, if somebody has to explain, because every person that goes there for the first time says, what's a bomb? And then you have to go through the whole shtick. And my fear is like, you know, that like, you know, one of my waiters is going to have to say that for the 100 millionth time and then just go crazy and kill everyone, you know? Like, you know, like making your 1 millionth Big Mac and then just snap, you know.
Oh, man.
I'm going to start a business making simple little recorder devices that have buttons on them. So it just has like one recording and it'll just say on the outside, what's a bomb? Press here. Oh, that one might be bad. But
what's a bomb?
But I mean, you know, like oh, tell us more about Umi Bushwick. Press here. And then it'll just have this pre-recorded, like, do-do-do, hey, guys. Something cute.
Someone did come up to us after the window. He was just chatting us up. A lot of people do come up just to chat.
Order marijuana.
Don't buy anything.
Yeah. Or pass us some. Last night.
This guy was asking us if we were thinking of scaling up our business or like becoming a chain or whatnot, and not even thinking it's too soon, but for us, I mean, my first response was it kind of removes us being able to be personable with every customer that comes by and to tell them our story, because if we do scale up and have other people serving the food for us, they won't necessarily feel the food the same way we do and prepare it with the same kind of care and like tell people the stories behind each one that are actually based on our personal experiences and adventures.
I think that's really special. It's something that that character that you find in restaurants, it's this lifeblood that exists in, I think, the first generation of ownership and you know, employees and whatnot, where you have this feeling, this culture that is conveyed, this idea, and it's something that is, I see, really difficult for restaurants to maintain, because, you know, a few generations of servers later, they don't necessarily have that same story, that same, you know, energy. It all creates the atmosphere, that bigger, you know, idea of what is a restaurant.
And I think that's the beauty of the pop-up, because we know it's going to be just us, like temporary this summer, us, and we are the pop-up. So it's funny because, for Burger Babes, we were used to setting up right next to each other on a makeshift table. But then for Umi, because of the way that the space is built, where the kitchen is all the way in the back, and then there's a cake studio office, and then in the front is a window, we were trying to figure out logistically how the heck we were going to be together when we were up there in the front. Like, Rinal was like, I'm not going to be up at the window selling by myself. Like, it's the both of us. So then we figured out how to, like, create basically, like, a makeshift kitchen. We, like, made our own, like, Banh Marie and, like,
I love that. BFF for life. I'm not doing this without you.
I was so stubborn about it. I was like, I'm not going to like yell the orders back to you. Run back, get the ticket, get the burger. Run, yeah. I mean, the
but, so right now you're handling the money and you know, counter and doing this stuff. I mean, Phoebe, are you
We're literally
cooking?
Butt to butt. Like, yeah. It's like a tiny space. We have to move out the like some of the espresso machines because there's a huge espresso machine. Like, if you just take a peek into our kitchen, we're using a magazine as a cash box right now. And like...
Nice.
And our fanny pack below. That's like for the big bills.
Ooh, the 20s and the 50s.
And then... Yeah, so every night we're like delirious, maybe at 4:30 a.m. trying to clean up, like carrying these huge espresso machines and putting them back in place. And then also, Sweet and Shiny has a bunch of this beautiful handmade glasswork because Elaine and Sarah, who both co-own the space, are glass blowers. So they have these like beautiful domes of like glass that hold the cookies that they leave.
So basically,
out front.
They're just like treacherous.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
You know, yeah. Self-destructing objects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 4:30 in the morning. Yeah.
But we both cook. So like when there's a huge group of people, we're like simultaneously talking to them, telling them the story based on what bunwich they chose, and then also building the bunwich because everything is just so close together that we can just do both front of house and back of house at the same time, essentially.
Let me ask you a question. So you're gonna be doing this until August.
Yeah.
So is there gonna be a part of you? Let's say that you guys kill it. Let's say that like there's a buzz around it. There is already a buzz around it. And let's say that you guys are just overwhelmed. You make a lot of money. Everybody's so happy. Is there gonna be part of you that doesn't want to go back to Shanghai, or are you? Is there things in Shanghai that you are committed that you have to do? Or is there a situation where you would not go back to Shanghai?
Or is there a fourth possibility that Phil hasn't brought up? But
what's that?
It's funny is that we actually did. Rennell wrote down pros and cons of staying or leaving Shanghai and was very logical about it when we were trying to make the decision.
We are coming back to New York after an additional year in Shanghai.
Why are you going back to Shanghai? What is it? It just feels like you have to accomplish something there, or do you have commitments to people, or?
Yeah, the companies we were working with, they're at the forefront of what they're doing. And I was with my team basically like as the, before we had any employees, and now there's like 30 to 40 employees, and it's a very strong team. And as my boss was saying when I was telling him that I was leaving, he said, you don't understand, like Shanghai is only going to be this way for the next maybe 2 years. You come back and after 2 years and it's going to be completely different and you won't have as much freedom and creative freedom as you do now.
Yeah.
And so we're actually planning that Umi Bushwick is our first project, or second, I guess, if you count Burger Babes.
Mm-hmm.
It's our first project as Umi Food Design.
Yeah.
So we've registered ourselves right now as Umi Food Design, and that will
LLC.
Become a that will become hopefully a food design consultant. We'll become food design consultants when we go back to Shanghai, mm-hmm. and help several of our friends who are opening up restaurants there, kind of doing the first, like trying to bring the first of whatever they want to bring to Shanghai.
Yeah. And when I was leaving, I mean, the opportunity that arose like right after I left, like Kate and Kimmy was building their central kitchen and they needed help like pushing out 200 new products of like pre-made food items, and they needed someone with our skills basically to create that huge product line. So it's exciting. There's a lot of opportunity over there and a lot of people need help. So
are you hiring?
Do you want to come with us?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind going to Shanghai. My girlfriend actually, my girlfriend loves China. She was part of, what's it called? Like the Model UN or the UN Model.
Oh, what, yes.
The
yes.
high school. So her country was China. And she
What's clarification, that? She's not still in high school.
No, she is. Yeah. She's 18. It's fine. It's completely legal. But when she was in high school, she actually spent, I think, like 6 weeks in China, and she loves it. So So it would be an easy sell for me to talk her into going back. She loves it.
Speaking of Jordan, which she's doing, what's the cheese thing she's in? She's doing the
International Cheesemonger competition.
She's like in it.
Yeah,
she's to win it.
She's in it to win it. She's representing the district. And do you know about this?
No.
It's a 2 days international event, and I think they have one in San Francisco and one in New York, but there are people that fly from all over. Wow. And it's a 2 day event, and it's like the cheese Olympics. You have to seriously, there's like a blind taste test. You have to tell them, you know, as much as you can about a cheese. There's one situation where they have a cheese person comes up to you, and you get like, you know, a certain amount of questions, and you have to guess what their favorite cheese is. You know, and there's one, a blind taste test, and then there's also a perfect bite, which is,
curated cheesing. Awesome. Well, good luck,
Jordan.
How
do you train for that? Like, do you just eat a bunch of cheese?
Eat cheese, I guess, yeah.
Wow. And talk about cheese.
And Patrick Martin's wife, Ann Saxelby, actually...
Ann Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers and Cutting the Curd.
Yeah.
She was hosting that for a while, but now it's, I think... Greg Blaze and maybe Emily are doing that show now.
Yeah,
she came in second last. She should have had it in the bag. That woman knows a lot about cheese.
Yeah, she does.
Wow.
Going back to your elevator pitch. I know this is like
no more about me.
I loved you use the word our buns are cradling different ingredients.
In the definition of the Bunwich. We have it on our menu.
Okay, so is Bunwich, is that a word that you guys made up, or is that an existing word? Also, tell us about the chip crusted brioche bun, because I mean, my imagination is telling me what that is, but I also don't know.
So when we were trying to brainstorm ideas of the food we wanted to serve when we were coming back, we came up with a few different ones, but then what we did was we sat down with some wine and we were like, what do we want to eat when we're drunk?
I want to do product development with you guys.
I know. Like, my favorite part of it is like market research when you like go, when we like went out to different food markets and we like stood, like, you, when you, whenever you go to like Smorgasburg, you're like in the front ordering the food. But if you ever go to Smorgasburg and just go the back way and just like look at people making the food, it's insane. It's crazy.
We like
things
studied
you see.
Every person's kitchen as we like walked around Smorgasburg.
Yeah. But anyway, so,
the Bunwich. Oh, yeah, we had, like, a stack of paper, a bunch of crayons, and we were at Hunter Gatherer, the restaurant that I helped open. And
you're wasted on wine.
It was a nice, classy, we took it slow. And we just started drawing, like, we, like, took our papers to ourselves and just started drawing with the goal of creating the dream food that we would want to be able to serve.
Yeah, so we knew we wanted, like, I love, like, juicy, savory fillings with like a crunch, and Rinald.
I love sweet things.
Yeah, like kind of similar. So we combine them, and we were like, okay, so we love how arepas, all the fillings that you put inside an arepa, you can see every single filling, and it's delicious. Like the outside has a nice crust, the inside is very like juicy and really filled. So we were like, oh, like how do we make an arepa? But then we don't want to do just like, we can't master that arepa, because I'm sure other people who like have done this for many years know how to make
guacuco.
It better. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we're right next to guacuco, so it doesn't make any sense. And then we were talking about the Dutch crunch, because Rinal is from Palo Alto, Northern California, and like
Bay Area is like Dutch crunch is like
crazy about Dutch crunch,
rice flour crunchy top to a bread that just like, you just hear a crunch every time you bite into your bread. It's awesome.
Yeah. And then for Burger Babes, you had an option to trick out your burger and add bacon jam and potato chips inside. So we were like, okay, we love putting chips inside burgers or sandwiches. So why not?
That's very Colombian.
Yeah. So why not put chips on top? And in Shanghai, we were using Lay's, but then China Lay's tastes different than American Lay's. We realized that when we came here. And we were like, why don't we use kettle chips? Kettle chips are way more expensive in Shanghai, but they're cheaper here. And also, they're non-GMO, and they taste amazing. So it's funny. If you like scan through our Instagram, we have like a documentation of the different buns that we've we've went through. Like, we thought that we were going to do a hot, like a long bun that was sort of shaped like a hot dog so that we could display the insides, like almost like a clamshell. And then we just sort of like, we
that's recipe testing in Shanghai for this. And
Umi Bushwick is the Insta handle.
Yes. Umi Bushwick. And,
I just couldn't find good enough ingredients. I think like the yeast was weird. It made the bread taste so strange. We used the same
manto improver.
Here. Yeah, I was like,
manto is like a rice bread ball. No, it's not rice.
It's just like the like Chinese baozi's.
Oh yes.
The yeast that they use for that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why, but every time I made those buns in Shanghai, they just didn't turn out right.
And well, that's weird.
I did the same recipe here, and it worked beautifully.
Atmospheric. Yeast, or does that have anything to do with like the
pollution? It can be the water, it can be the salt you use, the flour could be cut with something. There's a variety of factors.
Yeah, so what we ended up coming up with was, we were thinking about like the entire setup. We were like, we can display, like Rennell really wanted to display the buns up front. So that's what we do. We like every night, because it's like cleared out usually where the desserts are, we stick a whole like platter of like freshly baked chip encrusted buns up in the front. That's why people always think it's dessert, but it's not.
When people order them, we like the process of like slowly pulling a bun away from the other buns.
Yeah.
And it like,
cause we took inspiration bread, like, from pull, Hawaiian bread
and then we slice it open and then we toast it and then you just smell the butter and it just attracts people. They're like, what is this?
Yeah. But it's funny, after we tried the jerk chicken bun, and we were like, God, everyone around here uses Martin's potato roll.
Because it's the best.
It is.
It's the best.
And then Rennell was like, oh, God. Like, she was looking at the ingredient list, and she was like, they use so many starches and gums, and like, I need to figure out how to replicate this. Because
buy starches and gums.
Yeah. So, still, I mean, the buns are delicious. Every time we toast them, like, a whole group of people are like, oh, what's that smell? It's like butter. It's so funny because I was joking about it last night. Every time I try to make myself a bun when it's like pretty slow, I don't know if it's like the aromas that it's giving off, but like a whole crowd of people come and start ordering a bunch. And then by the time like my bun has like been sitting there, it's like become like a crouton. Yeah. I'm just like, oh my God,
it's a sacrificial bun though. It's,
yeah.
It's what brought everyone in.
You should do the McDonald's French fry thing. You know, some McDonald's put a fan so it blows out the French fry smell that everybody
knows.
Oh,
we did that last night, actually.
Oh, really?
Fan out. Yeah.
Way
ahead
of
you. It was really hot.
Yeah. But each
what days are you open?
Thursday through Saturday, 9 p.m. to 4 a.m.
Cool.
I think for Bushwick Open Studios, everyone keeps telling us how crazy it's going to be, so we're going to open at 6 every night.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
And that's coming up.
Next weekend.
Yeah,
and then we're also going to be at Taste of Bushwick on June 16th, giving out free little mini bun witches. And that's probably going to be the debut of our newest bun witch. We're trading out Cali for, I think, possibly Hong Kong. Ooh. We're trying to keep
You heard it first on the main course.
Yay.
The debut.
Yes.
we love having breaking news here.
I think we're gonna do something with a vegetarian duck or something like that. I don't know.
I love mock duck.
Yeah. Mock duck is delicious.
Whenever I go to like a Thai restaurant, I always get the mock duck. I don't know what it is. It's just great.
Well, I mean, I recommend everyone try the Bun Witch. Give it a shot. Check out Umi Bushwick. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. We're really excited to have you, and can't wait to see everything that comes next and your next project, and hopefully it'll be bigger and better. Phil.
Not much.
Yeah.
I'm opening up for lunch at Hi Hello next week.
Oh, yeah. Brunch.
Yeah. Well, we're open for brunch now, but now we're going to launch lunch, I guess, on Wednesday. So
Bushwick is a hot spot to be.
Yeah, man. It's the best.
Come out here for food.
What?
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. We'll see you. We'll see you next Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Thanks Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.